What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that came out this week. Let's kick it off with a big one. Batman vs. Robin, number one from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Mahmoud Azrar. This is spinning directly out of Mark Waid's Batman Superman and pitting, as you can tell from the title, Batman versus Robin versus Damian Wayne. But the big event here, this is not a spoiler because they put it out in the press, is in some way, somehow, it seems like Batman's butler, Alfred Pennyworth.
What was his name again?
I am not demeaning him. They changed the name of the TV show Pennyworth to Pennyworth, the origin of Batman's butler. So that's how
Alfred's
important.
Alive, motherfucker. Stop being weird about it. Alfred is alive. Nobody knows how. Nobody cares. We're just so happy that he's back and alive. This is great fucking news.
First off, Batman, Robin, these guys shouldn't be fighting. They're friends, traditionally. Second off, his butler shows up at the door. Where are the cucumber sandwiches? He's awful slow on the cucumber.
Oh, come on, man. Putting him to work, he comes back alive, and you're like, you're already upset there's no sandwiches. I mean, come on.
It is. So, obviously, we're at, like, the very beginning of the story, and I trust Mark Waid as a storyteller implicitly.
You should.
Like,
he's a great writer.
100% earned that. But at the same time, reading this issue where Alfred returns, where it's great. They deal with it emotionally. They deal with it contextually in terms of the plot. The stuff with Batman fighting Robin is great. But the way that they imply that Alfred kind of returned as a side effect of whatever Damian is doing is very weird to me. And there's got to be some sort of twist there because the idea that, like,
be careful.
Well, the universe wanted Batman's butler to return is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you feel bad for Batman. He's like, oh, universe, you brought back my butler? What about my parents? Remember them?
Come on.
I certainly like them, too.
Come on, dude.
So maybe the butler and then the parents, or the parents first and then the butler.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
But that's the universe's choice.
Let's get into the issue, though. This is a really great first issue. Really crazy, fucked up, very exciting. It's awesome to have a Zatanna Batman team up. Very excited for this. Amazing art.
What sort of
exciting
team up are you talking here? Because, spoiler alert, she's hung with her neck snapped, and she's only able to talk in the moments before she dies.
Well, we still get some Zatanna, you know what I mean?
It's like,
I feel like there's going to be more.
To be fair, Justin, I don't know if you knew this because you were out of town. Pete and I actually went to a cemetery over the weekend, and he looked out at all the graves and he was like, classic team up, me and that guy.
That's a great, you go to a funeral, you're teaming up with a corpse. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, when I die, please don't call it a funeral, call it a team up.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. And it's going to be one of those classic team ups where we get in a fight and then eventually team up to save the day.
So yeah, like, and it ends with us pissing on your grave.
Yeah. Not necessary. Very few team ups end with that, I will say. But I love Mark Waid as a writer. Any comic he's bringing to the people, I'm along for the ride. This comic goes hard. I love seeing Tim Hunter in here.
Yeah.
Did not expect that. Books of Magic. Shout out to that. I guess it's part of the full-on DC universe, which I had forgotten. And then he's got his screwdriver wand, which was what was happening in the most recent arc.
There you go. Good, fun stuff. Next up, Midnight Suns, number one from Marvel, written by Ethan Sachs, art by Luigi Zaharia. This is teaming up a bunch of magic characters in the Marvel Universe with Wolverine as they deal with a threat that has come directly from Strange Academy. Pete, how'd you feel about this? Some of your favorite characters in here.
I mean, this is very exciting. It's just a whole bunch of my favorite characters all in one issue. I mean, you got Doom in here. You got Ghost Rider. You've got Wolverine.
Wolverine is number three on your list of characters here?
No, you've got Blade. You know, like, there's just a lot of great. I'm not ranking these, asshole. I'm paging through the comic and just naming the ones that I see here.
You got page
so.
One. You got page two. You got page
oh,
three.
Oh, my God.
Classic.
You're such a fucking asshole, man.
I like all these characters. It's sort of a throwback to have a Wolverine just hanging. Wolverine's
wait,
like,
the
what
Wolverine's
am I doing?
Wolverine's the one where you're like, oh, this doesn't belong on this. Are you fucking what? Serious
no,
right
he
now?
Says it. To Justin's point, yeah, he's like, it. Why
Wolverine's
am I here?
Like,
I didn't have any of the visions that you guys had.
Yeah.
You need Wolverine's Wolverine. Like, that's why he's here.
I mean, I guess we'll see. I mean, other characters have knives they can cut stuff with.
Oh, my God. That's but not
I
all
do,
brings,
I do like this
you
team
fucking
up.
Asshole.
Yeah, he brings just sort of a surly attitude and some light cigar scent. But let me also
yeah,
say...
anything relate to there, Pete?
it's very funny, interesting how Strange Academy has become such a jumping off point for so many books. And like, it's really carving out a place in the Marvel Universe. And I think that's cool. I like sort of this mystery. I like the way that it was a vision that everybody had. Curious how old Doc Doom hangs with this. You don't see Doc Doom and Wolverine being like, oh, here we go again.
Drinking buddies.
You think?
Does Dr. Doom drink? Like, does he take off his mask to drink? Or does he have, like, a soda and it just sort of spills down his mask a little bit and gets stuck in his chin?
No, he's got a little kind of filter on there so he can just dump the booze right in.
Yeah, he funnels. He's a funnel. Yeah, I played beer pong against Dr. Doom. He's pretty good, but the metal's loud, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 10,000 Black Feathers, number one from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Andrea Sorrentino, as well as reteaming this classic team of writer and artist. It's also the kickoff of their Bone Orchard mythos, which seems like a big deal that they're leading into. So what did you guys think about this new horror-inflected comic book?
I'm curious. I don't get a lot of the Bone Orchard. Like, it is fall. Mm-hmm. Great time to go to an apple orchard. I didn't understand if this was like a bone tree where you pluck a bone down and make mm-hmm. some sort of...
bone cider?
Bone broth?
Yeah, a bone pie. Love of Thanksgiving. Love.
Here's
of
my problem. You guys have been to the Bone Orchard. My problem with going to the Bone Orchard is it always sounds like a nice idea, and then you have this huge sack of bones that's just like sitting in your house staring.
They
at
just
like,
sit in the back of the
them?
Fridge, and then you
what,
have
what
thrown
are you doing?
Away
you're
all
not
those
using
bones
the bones once you get them from the orchard. What kind of?
Well, you use them.
Why
but
go
like,
to the orchard
so
if you're not
going to
use them?
You paid so much money to get into the Bone Orchard, and you're like, oh, this is fun. You're picking the bones off of the bone tree. You're taking bites out of them. But then you have like sacks and sacks of bones, and it's just it's
so you're
too much
bone
bad.
Rich. What's the problem? I don't know.
Bone rich. Pete loves going to the bone orchard and watering the bone trees with his pee, which is a graveyard.
What the fuck? All right, let's talk about the comic here. This is creepy as fuck. I mean, anytime you got children,
I love walking
in here,
into a cemetery and be like, so could I pick everything? Like, it's one price to just take whatever I want, right?
I just grab a bag and just take whatever I want. Yeah, I have to weigh it on the way out.
If we could talk about the comic again, I think it's just, it starts off super creepy. You got kids in there and they're creepy as fuck. So I had some real problems continuing to read this because it was so creepy. But I managed to go through. It gets less creepy as it goes on, but then more creepy is the twist at the end. But man, very interesting. I think it's a solid first issue. Really awesome art choices they make in here, kind of really setting up like a tone and atmosphere type of feel. So yeah, I think it's very interesting.
I'm really excited for the Lemire Sorrentino universe that it feels like we're getting into. It has a nice sort of dark undertone. We don't learn too much about what's actually happening here, except the story's jumping back and forth between these two kids who meet and become friends. And then later, one of them, it comes back to the hometown and something horrible seems to have happened. So it's good setup for the mystery. Beautiful art by Andrea Sorrentino. Looking forward to more.
As long as they establish an issue to how you can carry all those sacks of bones back on the Metro North, that's the main thing I want to know, but fingers
Metro
crossed they
North.
Get to that. Yeah, Metro North.
Yeah. It's a great place. You'll see a ton of people with big old pecks of bones. Pick a peck of bones.
Vampirella Mind Warp, number one, from Dynamite, written by Jeff Parker, art by Benjamin Dewey. In this issue, Vampirella is going on one of them classic Vampirella adventures before she gets sucked spoiler, back to the 1960s, hence the mind warp of the title. What'd you guys think about this?
It's, you know, it's fun setup. I like the way it kind of started and she is more clothed and it being a little bit more appropriate. And then kind of fun cast of characters that we kind of get along the way and then kind of build up to the big kind of time jump at the end there. So interesting story. Kind of fun that it's not TNA based, it's story based, and yeah, interesting.
I like Jeff Parker as a writer. I feel like we haven't heard too much from him in a while, and this has a nice sort of take on the classic, like, underling trying to capture the hero situation, and I really like the way their sort of relationship, Vampirella and Ren, I think is his name. Mm-hmm. The way they sort of move through the story and the reveal at the end. Not what I expected, and I was pleasantly surprised by this.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. Jeff Parker is always reliable as a writer, and I enjoyed this. I gotta say, I don't know why it was specifically this issue that made me think of this, but I feel like the TNA covers are a legitimate detriment to Dynamite as a publisher because they have good books that they publish. But every single time we talk about something, we're like, wow, that was better than the cover. You know, like, and I wish they would just take that out of the conversation.
And even beyond that, it feels like the books have gotten better recently, but the covers are just variations on the same thing that they've done for so long. So agreed there.
Yeah. Next up, The Flash, The Fastest Man Alive, number one from DC Comics, written by Kenny Porter, art by Ricardo Lopez Ortiz. This is a fascinating comics, I think, to talk about because it is a three-issue lead-up to The Flash movie starring Ezra Miller, which so far is maybe never coming out. It was obviously timed for when the book was supposed to come out, but as is, right now, it's supposed to come out at some point next year. I guess that's TBD with everything that's happening in the background, both with Warner Brothers Discovery as well as Ezra Miller. But that all said, it's still a comic book that does exist. So what's your take on it?
Well I just to respond to that, why did they choose to release this right now? It feels very strange.
Because they made it.
Yeah, they had already made it. They had already solicited it, I guess. And this way, at least, like, you have three issues coming out over 3 months, then it's going to be collected at a trade at some point after that. And ostensibly, if we imagine a world where the Flash movie is coming out in 2023, then you have this prologue collection exists on the shelf that they could sell before the movie comes out. But sure. At the same time,
that makes sense. That all makes sense. Not complicated at all.
Yeah,
I just think that, like, I liked the art style of this book. I think they did like a different choice in the art, which I thought was really cool. It's kind of a different take on the DC style that we see. So I enjoyed that, and it was nice to have kind of a Batman team up and some touching dad stuff in here, you know, to kind of pull it away from the Ezra Miller bullshit for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the story itself, like, Girder was a cool, like, visual villain here. And the sort of educational bit that the Flash goes through with Batman, I don't know what this speaks to in the movie, if we're going to get this scene or something similar. But I liked this, the way it played out. It feels weird that this is just existing in its own movie continuity that we may never see. But as a standalone story, I thought it was an interesting Flash tale.
Yeah, I think Kenny Porter as a writer did a really good job here, though the Batman that we see here, which is supposed to be Batfleck, is nothing like anything that we've seen on screen. He's much kinder. He's much more considerate and thoughtful. He's not the guy who's just growling and shooting things up.
Not holding Dunkin' Donuts coffee in any scene.
Yeah, exactly. Not marrying Jennifer Lopez, a very specific thing that Ben Affleck did as a human being. Yeah. But as a comic book and as a fan of The Flash, I think this worked totally divorced from everything else. So there you go. If it worked as a one-shot comic book, who cares about anything else? You know what I'm talking about. Daredevil number 3 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Rafael de la Torre. In this issue, Daredevil is reeling from the revelation that maybe his entire life is, you know, just kind of a lie, like just a, like a little bit of a lie. And of course, he goes pretty hard on trying to recruit people in his fight to join the Fist. He finds out some revelations here that tie over into what is going on in the Punisher, and he tangles with Luke Cage a bit, and there's some big moves in terms of the world of crime in New York City. I love this. I think Chip Zdarsky is just like knocking it out of the park every single issue. But what did you guys think?
I agree. I think this is really cool. I like the Luke Cage kind of mayor stuff, which is great. I think that this is, I like what Daredevil's doing and the moves that he's making. So I'm interested to see how this all pans out, but really amazing art and panels and some, interesting reveals. Very excited to see where this goes. This is a really cool book.
Yeah, the way that Chip Zdarsky's putting Daredevil through his paces is really cool and really different from what we've seen before. It's the connection to the Punisher side of it. I'm very, really curious how that's going to play out, because it feels like two separate ideas, and I don't exactly know how they fight each other. How do they – who wins there?
Yeah. I don't think anybody necessarily, you know, we talked about this. We talked about this on a podcast where you were not here. I think Pete and I talked about it, but
what?
It feels
you guys still do it.
We do another podcast. It's a totally different podcast. We mostly talk about our experiences at the cemetery together, to be perfectly honest.
Or about how we're going to buy up Funko Pop, and become a partial owner.
Stop crossing the streams. That's a different podcast where we talked about that, Pete. But
nice.
I think we are heading towards something here. Like, there's already some initial teases in terms of what's going on with the Fist and the Hand. You have Daredevil leading the Fist with Elektra. You have Punisher leading the Hand. I feel like we're heading towards some sort of event type thing where you have all of these heroes leading these villain organizations. How does that come together? How do they clash? We're already getting a hint of that, but I feel like it's only the beginning potentially of something bigger that maybe hasn't been announced yet, if I'm reading the tea leaves right.
Ooh. Yeah, no, that's probably true. It's just the way that, and I've been enjoying the Punisher book too. And the Punisher feels like he doesn't really want to be in the Hand, but he has to. So, and it, there is a connection there between like he will have to sacrifice his love, something that Daredevil does like every weekend, basically, in his comics. So maybe there's a strong point there.
The Least We Could Do, number 1 from Image Comics, written by Elsa Rimboli, art by Iolando Zanfardino. This is a new magical book showing a very different sort of world with a very unique art style. What did you dudes think about this kickoff?
Yeah. Did Pip have something to say? Or
Pete, why don't you talk about this book?
Okay, so some really cool art style choices happening here. I really appreciated some of the kind of adorable choices that I felt like fit with what's happening. We see like the notebook sketches and stuff like that. But I love the action. Interesting kind of setup for this world. I thought the art style was great. The panel layouts are really cool. I'm interested to see kind of like, it kind of starts off with this character that's kind of got like a little Red Riding Hood look a little bit. So to kind of see what it all means and kind of fits together. But I think as a first issue, does a great job of setting up this world.
I like this too. It does a good job of just immersing us in the world without having to introduce it in sort of a painstaking way. A lot of show versus tell here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm curious, the sort of the way the magic works is after an apocalypse or the world sort of falls, different objects are imbued or seem to be like conductive of a person's power or life force or something. And I like that as sort of a premise or a guiding power set principle. So I'm curious to see how we explore that.
Next up, Masquerade, number one, spelled with a K.
Masquerade.
Just to be, oh my God. From Dark Horse Comics, written by Kevin Smith and Andy McElfresh, art by John Sprengelmeyer, and letters by the Phantom of the Opera. Right, Pete?
Nah. Yeah, nice. The gloriously restored Fantagious Theater.
So wow.
A
lot of stuff.
What year is it? What year is it in this book? In this comic book, what year is it?
Oh, great question. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on here.
Yeah, you go.
No. Go ahead, Justin. You clearly got a thought.
I was
going
to say, this comic, it feels like it's written in like the 90s from a very like, bros, we're going to make some comics. And it's like, doesn't treat people in the right way, I think, in this comic. There's some interesting things with sort of the hero or like main character, I guess. Hero's not the right word. That I'm curious to see where they would go. I like sort of the visual nature, but there's just so much like not good sex stuff and exploitation here that I was like, there was sort of a turnoff for me.
Pete, what about you?
Yeah, this is kind of like a Jennifer Aniston ripoff moment here. It's kind of like a face-off situation.
You got to specify what you're referring to here.
Oh, because of the
first
hair.
Character. That the Rachel. It kind of looks exactly like Jennifer Aniston in the beginning there.
All right.
Then we kind of have this face-off situation where different people are wearing different faces and taking on different people's roles. So it's kind of like a face-off, but with robots a little bit. So I don't know what's happening, I would like to be able to trust Kevin Smith as a writer and what's going on. And instead of the Detroit fist, you got the foot. So, you know, you see what they did there. I don't know. I'm interested to see what else happens.
So the plot of the book, as far as I can set it out, is there is a social media influencer who, as it's revealed at the end, and there's a spoiler here, was clearly abused by a bunch of men. Her face kind of cut up and slashed, potentially by one guy, potentially by multiple guys. She has gained some sort of technology that lets her impersonate people. Hence Masquerade of the title, and is capturing them, putting in cages, and is going to punish them. Meanwhile, there is a guy who gets fired from his company for some sexual misconduct and is potentially going to be hired by her or maybe by somebody else. My problem with the book, even though I do think John Sprengelmeyer's art is very good and very clean throughout, the action is super clear. There's a big action sequence that happens in the middle here with the main character that I thought was pretty well executed across, is like we're saying, first of all, there's too many things going on in the issue to hold on to any particular character as well as the plot. But also, like Justin was getting at, it's very retrograde in terms of its feminism, I would say. Yeah. It feels like a sort of thing like, we are making a feminist statement. Also, we are men, by the way. I don't know if we mentioned that. And granted, we're all three men here on the podcast, but reading this book definitely feels like that. I'm willing to give them the second issue here to see where it goes. To Pete's point, I think Kevin Smith has written some good comics in the past, but this is not selling me enough on the concept of the first issue, I would say.
Yeah, agreed.
Why don't we move on to another one that we've been very split on, Judgment Day number 4 from Marvel, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Valerio Schiti. I keep wanting to say Eternal Celestial that was reactivated by the Avengers and some of the Eternals, is continuing to judge the entirety of the human race, the entirety of Earth, and trying to find out whether they're worth it or not. At the meantime, Druig is continuing to attack the X-Men. I'll tell you what, I'm still not 100% sold on this crossover, but I think this was my favorite issue by far, and part of that is the focus on the Judgment, but also the fact that it actually got somewhere in terms of this overall conflict and the title of the crossover. It sounds like you guys felt the same. Go ahead, Pete. What did you think?
Yeah, yeah. Things finally happened. We're finally getting some stuff that, like, it's kind of like, okay. But, I mean, how this comic starts is there's so many word balloons. There's so much dialogue that kind of gets in the way of the art. It's really, it's kind of messy a little bit, and it's hard to get into. At least that's how I was feeling about it. But then kind of once you get into it, we do get somewhere, so it kind of becomes worth it. But I feel like now this is finally starting this event. So I'm hoping for some cool stuff moving forward. But overall, the art is really cool.
Yeah, true.
Dude, a little bit of an up at the end of the sentence.
Cool. I thought you were starting a song of some sort. Yeah, cool. like I agree, the art is very cool, and this issue was my favorite of the four because it does just—it's like here's some judgment, which is half of the title. But it's just so dense. It's like I feel like Kieran Gillen, a lot of his stuff lately has been just like incredibly dense. When I just want to like set down the plot for a second and just take a look around at the world, and to really show us that. So you really have to buckle up for that when you're getting into a book like this.
It's
great art.
I don't know if this was how it was meant, though I kind of suspect maybe it was. But this is the most I have felt like this is an issue to launch a bunch of one-shots and miniseries and tie into them that I've read at an event in a very long time. And even when we've been critical—
And that is what's happening, I think.
Yes, exactly. So— That is a little frustrating because it feels like it's very like read Judgment Day X-Men to find out more about this panel that's happening over here versus the pure idea of the crossover is really interesting in and of itself. The idea of like the Eternals and Avengers accidentally activating a Celestial who judges the human race. And this is a spoiler for the end, but ultimately the Celestial is like, nope, not worth it. And decides to destroy the Earth. That should have been issue one in my mind.
Yeah. And that would track more with like a crossover, like the Infinity Gauntlet, something I think we go back to as executing at a super successful level, bringing a ton of characters together to do one thing and deal with one situation. And then this is just a little chaotic because of so much of what's going on.
And I do think, not to spend too much time on that, but I do think part of that is Valerio Schiti's art, who I like Valerio Schiti as an artist, but the action sequences aren't necessarily tying with each other. The panels aren't necessarily tying with each other. It's a very, one of you, I'm sorry, use the word chaotic, but it's a very chaotic reading experience. And part of that is the panel layout, which it's frustrating because I like both of these creators. I feel like there is more to get out of this, but it's not quite getting to it at the moment. Then we got one issue to go.
It's hard to keep us straight.
I think there are two more.
Who says what?
Are there two more?
What
I mean? There's an Omega. I don't know at this point if we count the Omega or not.
No, there's a five and a six, and in the middle there's like 10 to 15 other books, and then the Omega.
Cool. I'm very tired. Let's move on and talk about Wonder Woman number 791 from DC Comics, written by Becky Cloonan, Michael W. Conrad, and Jordi Belair, art by Marguerite Sauvage and Paulina Ganisho. We're kicking off a new arc here as Wonder Woman heads to the jungle to investigate somebody who is experimenting on animals. You can figure out where that's going because the cover spoils the end of the book in classic comic book fashion. Real bummer there. But as usual, this team is turning in such a solid comic book. And Marguerite Sauvage, who is like iconic at this point, adds such a nice flavor to what they're doing.
This is breathtaking art. I mean, the tripped out skeleton flower was just unbelievable. Amazing panels. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if we see at comic conventions people like tattooing some of this stuff because it is just that stunning and that absolutely
people like
just,
pee.
No, I'm just saying it's just so good that people are going to want to hang on to it and want to kind of have it for their own because it's so good.
When are we going to get a CBC tattoo?
Yeah, when are
CBC
we going to
tweet?
Do that?
We get those all the time.
We get a lot of those. CBC cat.
I think this is like really fun last page reveal, even if it was spoiled, like kind of built up to it. Nice. Love the moment with her mom. This was just, this is some great Wonder Woman comic that we're getting right here. So I'm having a good time.
What I love about this run is it's not event based for the character. Like it really is just like a run, just like, let's tell these stories. And I feel like, when Becky and Michael like get together and even for the backup story, the Jordi Belair, like it really feels like they're like just like, hey, what do we want to do next? Oh, let's do this thing. We'll get Cheetah in this. We'll get like it. It feels really collaborative and organic in a way that a lot of comic runs just don't anymore.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Love Everlasting, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Tom King, art by Elsa Charterier. This is continuing the journey of our character, who is probably trapped in a romance comic book, though it's not entirely clear yet. Unlike the first issue that focused on three different stories here, we're really focusing in on one that is very like Jane Austen style romance that she is trapped in. Things are breaking through. They're developing in certain ways. I love this book. Love Elsa's art. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. I mentioned this with the first issue. It's very reminiscent, though not derivative, of Darwyn Cook. Yes. Great book. What do great you guys call. Think?
Yeah, I love this book too. It feels like it is treating the romance genre as sort of the medium, and then invading it with some other genres. We have some Western elements here, some horror elements, and I think that's really cool. We've all been in a romance where at the end of the day, it's really just a gunfight. So I think it was really great to really feel seen here.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think the art is the real king here. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, Tom is writing the heck out of this.
Are you talking about the queen passing, like the real king?
Oh, R.I.P.
Oh, no. No, I'm not. I'm not being that. Yeah, I'm not getting into that. But I just –
by the way, we should mention, just for clarity, we are royalists on the podcast. Go ahead,
Peter. 100%. I will be in London next week for the queen's funeral, so I'll be sure to lay down some lilies or whatever.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. I will be sure to lay down.
But I agree with you guys.
She's going to the bone orchard, and I'm picking.
Wow.
The queen's bone orchard.
She would have loved that.
This is some beautiful art. It's interesting kind of mashup of storytelling here. It almost kind of had like a Cinderella kind of feel to it a little bit in this. But I'll be interested to see how this all comes together. But intriguing first couple of issues. But again, the art's the real winner here.
Predator number 2 from Marvel, written by Ed Brisson and art by Kev Walker. In this series, the Predator has become the predated.
Wow.
No?
I don't know if that's the
one. Wow, that's probably not happened. Correct. Whatever it is, there is somebody who is hunting the Predator throughout the universe because the Predator killed their parents. And in this issue, she gets closer than ever to it. I freaking love this story. I'm not like...
I freaking love it, man.
I am not the biggest fan of Predator. Alien is much more my thing, if we're going to break it down by that.
Okay, but douche. All right.
This is
Did
so
you watch Prey?
Good. I love Prey. I thought Prey was Prey. Awesome. But this comic is so good. I love this story. Kev Walker's art is amazing, which is probably part of the reason that I'm loving this so much. But... it's great. Are you guys on the same page, or are you like?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Are you on the hunt for page?
I agree with you. I freaking love this art, Mr. Bigglesworth. It is just really. It's a fun. They're taking something that is could be like, all right, another Predator story, but it's really intriguing and pulls you in all the right ways. And I'm really impressed with not only the action that we're getting, but the story. So it's impressive what they're doing with this comic, and I've been enjoying the heck out of it.
To me, it shares a lot of DNA with the Alien comics we've seen that Marvel's doing, as well as just the Alien movies in general. Like, we have sort of a Ripley-type character who is alone trying to get to the bottom of a mystery and get some justice dealt out. It's really good.
Nothing like dealing justice.
The Jurassic League, number 5 from DC Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson and Juan Gedeon, art by Juan Gedeon. This issue, our dinosaurs are fighting against the dark side dinosaur.
Our dinosaurs.
Home team dinosaurs. All right, yeah, this is just so much freaking fun, all right? I loved it. The kind of Superman dinosaur also, like, flexing as he stomps. I was a little upset that, you know, they had to kind of like take a moment for themselves, but it's important to work on yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you have to
get dinos.
Yeah, the dinos, even dinos, to do a little self work to get to the place where they can help out their friends. Yeah. So this
there
is
were a lot
fun.
Of dinosaurs that were fossilized on a therapy couch.
Oh man, so close. You know what I mean? They were just so close to
really close to a breakthrough.
Perfect. Sorry, form, this is a little bit of a side note, but have you guys seen on HBO In Treatmentosaurus?
I love it. It's a lot of growl, like sort of loud noises, right. A lot of roars. Jurassic World In Treatment, genius. Put it together.
I'll Alan grant you that one.
Wow. Everyone thinks I'm a clever girl, but I just struggle to be clever in the situations, you know? Mm-hmm.
Pete, anything else you wanted to say?
No, I was going to say things, but, you know.
I guess we covered the same things that you're going to say. You're going to say the same things that we said.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same things that you said.
This book is like shaking up a toy box.
And in all the right ways. Don't say it like it's a bad thing.
It's fine. But if we're talking about two Daniel Warren Johnson books on this comic book podcast, I'm ready to talk about the second one.
Well, all right. Take it easy, because like this is,
sure, take it
you
easy.
Know, you don't have to, you know, just because it's the toy box doesn't mean it's not fun and enjoyable. You know what I mean?
I'm like, not saying it's not fun and enjoyable. It's dinos bumping into each other.
Yeah, but it's also a little deeper than that, because these dinos are going through some growth and trying to figure out who they are inside, okay? So don't fucking just make it a toy box.
You know what I'll say? It extinks. No, I actually like
that's
it.
Not
I
good.
The critic over here.
It doesn't stink.
That might be a joke from the television program.
It's from The Critic. I'm sorry. Above Snakes, number 3 from Image Comics. I want to be clear. I like Jurassic League. Above Snakes, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Sean Lewis, art by Hayden Sherman. This continues this weird, wild Western that is happening where... Love Sean Lewis, but I think the real standout here is Hayden Sherman. The way that he's drawing these characters, the way that he's drawing the Old West is so interesting and so sparse. I love looking at every panel in this book. Pete, I know you're a big fan. What'd you think about this?
Yeah, this is weird and creepy in a lot of different interesting ways. I think one of the greatest things about this book is how it's kind of unveiling what it's about. It's taking its time and it's confident. It's not kind of like explaining itself. It's having enough confidence to just kind of like sit with the characters as the characters are kind of wandering through this crazy forest. So I'm really impressed with kind of what we're getting and how we're getting it here. This is some weird stuff, but I'm really enjoying it. I think it's super creative.
This book reminds me of Bone a little bit, with our sort of bird characters, mashed up with just sort of a pretty gritty Western that takes some risks. And that's cool. I've never seen something quite like this, of the cartoonishness mixed with the grit. So it is a one-of-a-kind book, and I like it.
Cool. The Amazing Spider-Man number 9 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, ooh, art by Patrick Gleason.
Ooh.
This what? Issue boo. Is not only Spider-Man bullshit. Dealing with Mary Jane, one of Pete's absolute favorite things, but it's also set during the Hellfire Gala, which is when, oh my gosh, I'm blanking it, Moira MacTaggert took over Mary Jane's body. So we're dealing with the fallout from that. It's a couple of months later, which is a little bit of a bummer, I gotta say. It's also coming in the middle of a run on Amazing Spider-Man that I've really dug quite a bit. So taking this seeming side trip over to X-Men Lab was also a little bit of a bummer for me. But at the same time, Zeb Wells, good writer. Patrick Gleason, great artist. And so I wasn't too mad at the book, but I'm excited to get back to the main narrative next issue, personally.
Yeah, I just think... It's rubbing salt on a fucking open festering wound to just kind of like fuck with our emotions here with the MJ Peter Parker stuff. So I didn't appreciate it, the kick in the nuts that we got in this issue. But I guess some people
can,
Marvel
can I just say
enjoy.
Something, Pete? If you have a festering wound that has been open for the past 10 years or more.
Yeah.
You're in the bone archer, man.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
you
got to
get that
am.
Treated.
Yeah.
Or you're just going to be bones.
Marvel's not treating it. You know what I mean? So why should I? If they're going to leave this fucking opening corpse just lying here festering, you know, why should I treat it if they're fucking treating me like
shit?
Let me
just real quick, just to define that. Are you saying this open corpse is you, Spider-Man, or the Spider-Man-Mary-Jane relationship?
Obviously, it's the Spider-Man-Mary-Jane relationship.
Is it a literal open corpse?
Yeah.
No,
and what do you mean by open corpse? Is that like an open house where it's like anyone can take a tour?
Yeah, everyone can come and spit on something that they really worked hard
to. I want to have an open
ventricle
corpse
that
funeral.
Gets a lot of sun. You got to check it out.
You're going to love it. I understand, Pete, that this relationship frustrates you, and we're in a run on this book where something bad happened between them, and we don't know what it is. Yep. So we're only getting sort of the fight. But on the positive side, and let me make this case for you, there's some heat here. There is more spark in their relationship than there has been since the Mephisto breakup.
Yeah.
I think like there's page 19, this panel that is like full of bugs eating people. There's just a great like moment where they say hey to each other. And like that's the comic that you want. But like a lot of relationships,
but they're not giving
complicated.
Me.
Yeah, but they are giving it to you. You just have to look a little bit beyond the pain. And we end the issue with them. Like Mary Jane has she has a great line, which is like it's about responsibility. And of
something
course, something that
should,
Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I like the way that Zeb Wells is really coming at the continuity in a way that I haven't seen before. The fact that we did this through a deep X-Men continuity situation with Wolverine, again, hanging out for a not super germane reason, it feels like, is awesome. Like, we're burying a great Mary Jane relationship, Mary Jane and Peter relationship moment in the Hellfire Gala. That's wild. And there's great action in this book. I think this run is really cool. I'm curious if we're going to get to the reveal sooner rather than later.
we'll move on from that poignant silence.
Did I make
there.
A case for you? The defense rest.
Well,
I
just
fall in love again.
Want them to get back together so fucking bad it hurts to see them fight.
They were together. They were together before. Wait, what are you saying, Justin?
I said that's what romance is. It takes a while. That's what heartache is, and you got to feel that heartache.
It's
feel
been
that
Peter years, bro.
Peter Parker's whole thing is feeling these emotions and not being able to deal with them because he has to go fight crimes. You're doing the same thing, except you're not fighting crimes. You're reading a comic, so just at least you don't have to get to purchase.
I'll take it because you compared me to Spider-Man, so that's super cool.
Superman, Son of Kal-El, number 15 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Cian Torme. In this issue, we're bringing a ton of arcs, I would say, probably the first 15 issues, maybe not to a close, but certainly to a climax here, as Superman and his pals take an assault on Genovia? That's not it. That's the movie from the Princess Diaries. So probably not.
Wow.
But whatever it is, it's Harry Bendix's country. You guys know. You've read this book. Anyway, it's a big fight going on there. There's a big emotional moments. I love Superman and his boyfriend. I think they're great. And the way that Tom Taylor has writing this is so romantic throughout this book.
Yes.
They are absolutely crushing it. Honestly, I'm a little bummed that Kal-El is coming back, to be fair.
Well, and I'm curious how that will affect everything. The name of the place is Gamora, which is very similar. But I agree with you. The romance is so strong. And I do think, like, I trust this team so hard. So I think bringing Kal-El back will, I assume, bring us a little bit of a new direction. It feels like we've concluded a lot of, like, just Henry Bendix stuff in general here. And introduce maybe a new power situation for this Superman. So lots to look forward to. At the same time, a lot of stuff coming together.
This is really great comic books. I love what they're doing with Super Kal-El and this, or Son of Kal-El. I think it's just one of those things where it's very touching, side to him. And I really appreciate the fact that they're leaning into this. Robin's slap meme, kind of switching it instead of the Batman slap, was such a great panel. So fun. That whole line of like Robin being like, I heard you've been constantly trying to hurt my best friend. Like, just I'm having a blast with this comic. I don't want it to end. I don't want them to change this up. This is the most fun I've had in Superman in a really long time. And I'm really impressed with this kind of take on it. And I feel like, this is just great, great comics.
Agreed about that, except for the Warworld book, which I'm also have been loving.
Philip Kennedy Johnson. I don't want to take anything away from what he's doing. It's fucking really great, but this is a little different.
Shout out to the Lex Luthor work in this book as well, which I thought was awesome. Reestablishing him as great super villain.
Such a great issue, and the last thing that I'll say about it is it really drove home to me that I kind of love these sub-in characters that happen just because it elevates the game of the writing and art team, that they feel like they need to meet up to these iconic characters. And it's not necessarily about switching it up so much as legitimately having, like, how is John Kent going to live up to the legacy of his father? Let's figure that out. Or same thing when Dick Grayson became Batman. How is he going to live up to Bruce Wayne now that Bruce Wayne is dead? Same thing with Bucky when Bucky became Captain America. All three of those runs were so good. And a lot of them is about having that conflict, having that striving, having that, how do I live up the memory of this person who I love with every inch of my being and I want to be worthy of with every inch of my being, but I don't know if I can. And then they get there, and it's such a satisfying, wonderful arc to read. We'll have Kal-El back. Like you said, Justin, Philip Kennedy Johnson is killing it.
Hell yeah.
Tom Taylor is killing it on Superman Son of Kal-El, so I don't expect that to change. But this is great. If you haven't picked this up, pick up the first 15 issues and trade or otherwise, because it's phenomenal. Let's talk about a run that is ending here, though, for real. A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance, number 11 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Andre Lima Araujo. We jump forward in time here, and this is a spoiler, but we get to see the little kid that our main character was taken care of, kept safe, getting his revenge on the man who kicked everything in motion here. There's really a lot of answers, answer that happens in this issue that really justifies and explains a lot of the things that have happened throughout this series. But what did you guys think about this? Pete, I'm curious to hear from you. I know you're a big fan. You're a big fan, of course, of Rick Remender. How do you think this tied up?
I was really impressed. I immediately after reading it, I wanted to go back and read all of it again, just because it, you know, with the way it comes out kind of monthly, I was just a little bit like, oh man, you know, because I haven't seen this bad guy in a while. I thought they made it super clear who the kid was, but I was kind of like, I wanted to kind of see the start of it again. But man, I'm really happy that I'm walking away from a Rick Remender book, not as heartbroken. You know what I mean? Like, he gives us a little bit of sunshine on a rainy day. Like, he still fucked us over, and I'm trying not to spoil it for people so they can go and read it. But man, I feel like Remender's making some changes in his life. You know what I mean? He's given us a little bit more sunshine, so it's enjoyable. The art's bananas. This is just this is a great, great comic that should be collected and should be held up as one of Remender's great runs.
I do like there is sort of a positive ending in that some murder happens to someone who maybe deserved it. But fact we spent a lot of time just riding along with the villain and just privy to all of his power and excesses in a way that I feel like Remender was like, look, this is what happens with these people. And only in this case we get sort of vengeance dispensed to them. So it was great art, as always, great story. And I know it was sort of a more winning end to a series from Rick Remender, but it still left a sort of horrifying taste in my mouth for the reality that Remender has shown us.
Yeah.
Castle Full of Blackbirds, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola and Angela Slater.
Angela. Ooh, you love her. Samantha. Who's the boss?
Art by Valeria Berzo. In this issue, we are exploring further the Mignola verse and focusing specifically on some witches, I guess is what we call them.
Well, and you know, we were about to talk in a second about the other Mignola book that came out, Young Hellboy. And both of these books are sort of like almost all ages Hellboy universe books in an interesting way, with dealing with some maybe larger things. But it's like, and we talk about this a lot. I made a thing like, I wish there was more Hellboy. Now it's just like, okay, now there's a lot of Hellboy coming out all the time. And this is not the flavor of Hellboy I expected. This is like a Lunchables Hellboy that you can just take on your way to middle school, I guess, if you want to. But it definitely feels like this, Castle Full of Blackbirds feels like a full-on all-ages Hellboy world book.
I agree. Yeah, we kind of get a different main character other than Hellboy, which is nice. But also, the way they deal with magic is really cool. The artist is killing on this book. Like the whole kind of like her learning to use her powers kind of thing was really an impressive couple of pages to kind of watch that all happen. This is a nice kind of like, I love Hellboy, but maybe if it would be a little bit more kid friendly or more accessible, this definitely does all that, but still has that kind of like wildly creative kind of tripped out Hellboy stuff. So it's impressive what we're doing here, and it's all under the umbrella of Hellboy, so super cool.
The Silver Coin, number 14 from Image Comics, written by Pornsack Pinochet, art by Michael Walsh. In this issue, we're dealing with what life was like in Hollywood during the pandemic. You remember those days, right? Back in those days.
I was certainly reminded of them in this comic.
Oh, man. I mean, Justin was the headline producer at the time in Hollywood, so he knows.
This is taking place in multiple timelines, jumping back and forth to slowly fold out this story that only eventually loops back to the silver coin of the title. This is one of the books, I feel like we're now two issues in a row where I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, this is too much. I don't know about
it's
this
stressing
one.
Me out.
Finally, yeah. Finally, you're at where I'm at with it.
Well, this one especially, like, I was like, this is stressful because of the way they're talking about pandemic. I was like, that's how I talked about it. Oh, am I going to end up murdering some close people in my life? And then, secondarily, a lot of touching eyeballs with sharp objects, something I don't enjoy.
Even in comic book form, it's still fucking creepy as fuck.
Don't let me say those are negative comments, because as a horror book, this is continues to nail every issue. I thought this issue was great, and it sort of gave me little butterflies in my stomach in just when I wanted them.
What the fuck? You got excited butterflies from this book?
I mean, more like, whoa, that's unsettling.
Okay. To be clear, I got butterflies like, I want to ask it to marry me.
Yeah. We've all had different butterflies in our stomachs.
I didn't have
any butterflies. The butterflies you had in your stomach, you went to the Museum of Natural History and ate those butterflies, right?
No, I had more Silence of the Lambs butterflies.
He ate a caterpillar and it turned into a butterfly in his stomach.
This book was too fucking scary. This issue was way too fucked up and way too scary. And the coin reveal came a little too late for me. And
I'm just an earlier coin reveal?
I needed to know how... Well, what was going on? It was just so scary and fucked up. Horror is not my genre. So if you like horror, this is probably great for you, or yes. this is very enjoyable. It was too fucked up for me. So, but the art is great.
I want to give a shout out, and I don't know why this was the issue that this specifically struck me, but shout out to Michael Walsh on this book, because most titles are author driven. They're like, well, the writer can write the script pretty quickly, so we're going to put that out every month. But Michael Walsh has put out the Silver Coin 14 months in a row, I think, with killer, very different stories. Great. The art has been consistently awesome and terrifying every issue. This is just on like on the base of being an amazing comic book project. It's super, super impressive, regardless of what you think about it on an issue by issue basis.
Honestly, it's made me like coins less. I keep the change. I can't trust these little silver circles.
Don't trust it.
Let's talk about the other Mignola book, Young Hellboy, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola and Thomas Nagowski, art by Craig Russo. This is a little bit more of a classic Hellboy book as we get young Hellboy going on a mysterious adventure. What'd you guys think about this one?
This was adorable, but also like a little kind of trip down scary, because we kind of switch perspectives on what's actually happening here. Based off the young Hellboy's point of view. Great art. I'm a little worried about Hellboy and what's going on, if he's going to be okay or if he needs to talk to somebody and explain about his reality versus the real reality. But cool and fun.
I young do think Hellboy, he'll be all right because of older Hellboy.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. But otherwise, I like this sort of masquerades as an all-ages book, but there's a dark underbelly to it happening the entire time. And there's a reveal to be had here that I won't really mention too much about what is actually happening or who is leading young Hellboy down this path.
Last but certainly not least, do a powerbomb number 4. From Image Comics, written and art by Daniel Warren Johnson. And in this issue, our main characters are getting further into their Mortal Kombat style wrestling elimination challenge on another world. They are finding out more about other competitors as well as the stakes here. It was great.
First off, you're pronouncing the title wrong. It's Do a Power Bomb. There's an exclamation point, and it's all squeezed together, you know, like you're yelling to somebody, like, Do a Power Bomb. So you got to say it like
that. You're shouting it in a crowd.
Yeah, and you can't say enough about Daniel Warren Johnson's art style, his heart that he brings to every one of his projects. It is not only beautiful, but touching and moving, how he can take something like wrestling and make it so much deeper and more relevant. It's really impressive. The stakes, everything that's going on. There isn't enough words to describe how great this is and how much fun. I'm excited about wrestling. It's weird. I didn't know I would be in this place, but man, this is just such great comic book storytelling and art combination and such a great package. Holy effing shit. If you like comic books, check this out. You won't be disappointed.
Holy effing ass. I agree. Like this, this book is great. Quickly risen to the top of the stack. Like we talk about just like, we love some great superhero action. This has all that and more, and it's just wrestling. It is so visceral watching these wrestlers like land these special moves that they're doing. It's body horror in a way, but it's awesome. It's great, top to bottom. Definitely highest recommendation.
If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you at the Boone Orchard.
Oh, boy.
Pissing in the Boone Orchard.